Hello, what's up, party people? What's up with you? What's up with you? What's up? What's up? What's up, party people? Hope you're doing well. Listen, I'm seeing you here, Padre Casey. So here's the interesting thing. In our diocese, I just saw a report today. I live in the Diocese of Syracuse, but the bishop basically just implemented no sacraments are offered now in our diocese until further notice. So no gathering for, you know, possibilities and occasions of, you know, adoration time. And look, in our parish, we weren't allowed to, you couldn't have more than 10 people in the parish at all. So that was the way it's been for a little while. And yet they still were offering that as an option. And then I think on Wednesday nights, they were offering 10 people at a time could come in and disperse around the church and go to confession if they wanted. And Father had it kind of figured out so that he would be protected and safe. And then people could pray, and then they could rotate out, you know, people could come in and, you know, whatever. They just basically said no. So now, think about it. No, there's nothing like that available now. So there's no confessions. There's no adoration time. You can't even go into a church now and pray, which, you know, obviously we don't have to. We don't have to go into a church to pray, but... But I just, that phrase, until further notice, really just irritated me, especially thinking about how literally, and forgive me for being completely cynical and irritated here, but literally we can go into grocery stores and there's tons of people still. You can go walk, we walked by a place that literally sells pallets. And, you know, and they have a few people working at that place. None of those stores are closed. But yet we're seeing that you can't even go into a church with 10 people or less to pray. That's just weird to me. Here's another thing that I just saw. And, you know, of course, there's always going to be some weird story, some extenuating circumstance where this is going to happen. But I just saw this thing where it was reported that if somebody in your family, let's say, had the coronavirus, that a state official could come in and remove that person from your family. That's just crazy talk. I mean, if you're all self-quarantined and you have that person quarantined, and this is what Linda had said right from the beginning, was that, you know, we have to be careful about how much power ultimately that we relinquish when it comes to the government, because it's a lot easier to hold on to what you have rather than try to get back what you gave up. And I don't know, I'm not trying to be an alarmist, but there are things that happen that I feel like are just the catalyst for a story I feel like I've read before. I like what you're saying, though, about the our churches are closed, but we still have outdoor confessions. I'm going to guess that that's not even allowed here in our diocese. I could be wrong, but I'll find out. Yeah, or Orwellian is definitely the case. That's what it feels like at sometimes. You know, I think it's a real predicament and a struggle, and I sympathize with it. And I, listen, I'm a person that would be at odds, you know, and not, the odds would not be in my favor when it came to being exposed to that virus and getting it. Like, I've had the heart conditions and all that stuff. So, But there's a part of me that's like, I feel like, you know, you just can't say that, okay, the liquor store is allowed to be open and that you cannot open up the church for 10 people or less. I just don't get it. And but look, I have tons of friends that are personal friends. Tons of priests that are personal friends, and I don't want a single one of them to be exposed to anything bad or to be sick. And I think that unfortunately, there are we're going to see for the next few days at least a lot of numbers go up, and so implementing this you know, social distancing and being careful is good. I get it. We have to do that. But if you have this in place where you're being careful, I just think it's weird. I think it's just a little bit weird that we have to say, I'm not saying, hey, everybody get together at 7 o'clock. We're going to gather and we're going to worship at our church. That's crazy talk. Right. But, just water, by the way. And anyway, so I don't know. I've been thinking about that a lot. I don't know how to process this because I'm super sympathetic to the fact that I want to do everything we can to be careful. I live in New York, and so obviously we're hypersensitive up here to all of that. And I'm obsessive compulsive about a lot of stuff like this, and I'm a little bit of a hypochondriac at times. But so I'm on the pro, let's be careful side. But then there's another part of me that's just kind of like, you know, the moment the government starts saying, I'm going to implement some sort of discipline to, you know, like self-quarantine for you, taking kids away from parents. Like, I literally just heard a story about a guy that was at a park with his daughter. Nobody else is around. They're not near anybody. And the police handcuffed the dad in front of the daughter, the kid. It's just weird. Yeah, I agree, Melissa. There's a lot of people who are not taking the virus seriously, but I guess what I'm saying is that if you have people that are very careful, that are being serious, that are going through all of the things to do that, you know, and you can go into a grocery store and you can be socially distant there, why is it that 10 people or less can't walk into a church and just pray without talking to anybody and, you know, washing their hands, you know, maybe wiping off where they're sitting? I mean, I don't know. It's just a really worthwhile thing to consider. Yeah, I think that there's a lot of that going on now. Just that any type of sacramental act from a priest is, you know, that's all kind of on hold right now. So look, I think maybe the reason we did it in our diocese, and this is the logic that I'm kind of flowing through, would be that we're really encouraged now this week and next week, if I can't remember if it's 2 weeks now or just 1 week, but they really want everybody even to avoid going to the grocery store because they're seeing some fruit and some results with people staying home. So I get it, right? And so we're in New York, and obviously this is a big problem in New York. So they're like, okay, let's just implement this high octane, you know, quarantine. And so that makes sense. And so my guess is that the bishop is just trying to really fall in stride with that. And I have a lot of respect for this bishop. I don't have any qualms with him. It's just when I saw that today, I think a little part of my of me, you know, was sad. and it just makes me ask the question, why could you go into a Walgreens, a Wegmans, a, you know, whatever your grocery store is, and that's going to be okay. And then people will say, well, now you have to have, you know, a certain amount of people can only be in the grocery store at one time. Okay, good. That's what we were doing with the churches. So, okay. You know, anyway, that's actually not what I was going to really want to talk about tonight. So Ingrid, am I trying to look smart? I don't know what you mean by that. Is that, are you being silly with me? Are you making a jab at me? This is definitely not my smart look. I will say that. So at what point does the solution become worse than the problem? I know. And that's the big question. So I don't know. Look, I'm following what our state's asking us to do. We're self-quarantined. We're being really careful here. Even in my own house, like, I'm pretty diligent about washing my hands. We're using whatever we can to ensure that we're being careful. And even, honestly, even just on a minimal level, we're not, you know, like, going around hugging everybody and, hey, let's shake hands and, you know, whatever. So, even within a home, our home, you know, we're implementing that. But I think when I look at stuff around me and I see certain stories that are unfolding, there is at times a cause for alarm. And so we're hoping and praying that the numbers are going to start falling down. We're seeing some positive things happening in New York. But yeah, 2 weeks we're kind of really being like asked to not even go out to the grocery store if we can avoid it. And like I said, I think that might be the meaning behind the kind of the closing almost of the doors for our parishes. So look, we haven't been going to Mass now for a few weeks, just like everybody else in the United States. So it's not like that's new. We've been doing that. That's fine. But you still have these moments where people could go into a church and pray as long as there were not more than 10 people there. So, in fact, two of my kids were supposed to altar serve for Easter Mass. We weren't going to be able to go, but two of my kids were going to go. But then they said they couldn't because they're under 18. So it's just a whole new world, man. Everything is so different right now with how things are being implemented. And I'm sympathizing a lot with people who are struggling with habitual sins, or who are struggling with just this conversion that's happening in their hearts and wanting to go and spend some time before the Eucharist, or wanting to go to reconciliation. Maybe some people for the first time in a long time. You know, think about it. There's a group of people that will always go. You know, the joke is they're called Christers, Christmas and Easter kind of people. But maybe this is their time that they're going to go and they're going to try to get back on track with God. And now, ultimately, kind of that could easily look like it's disrupted. And hopefully, people can realize, okay, yeah, things are changing and different, but God is still with us. So, don't be afraid to reach out to Him and pray to Him and ask for mercy, because He is a God of mercy. But anyway, it's been tough. So a lot of people are struggling, and many of you out there can relate and you understand. And there's a lot of different countries here present. So I can see already. So you know what I'm saying. Some of you are going through the same thing in your area as well. Once a day in the UK, you can be stopped and face a fine if you're congregating with two or more people. That's really interesting, right? Yeah. So I had mentioned this the other day, but when I went in to get my blood drawn, because I have to have my blood drawn every few weeks, and before I could even go into that building, they took my temperature. And thank God it was, it was no problem. And I don't have anything going on, but it was a little bit of a, like, what would happen if all of a sudden you find out you have a, you have a fever, but it has nothing to do with the virus. Like, it's just kind of scary a little bit right now for people who, might struggle with a basic, common cold. Now everybody's immediate thought is, oh my gosh, do I have the virus? And, I kind of bring all this up because the topic I wanted to say is just something happened tonight. It was kind of interesting. It's a little personal. I'll share it with you though. All the people's names will remain nameless. That doesn't even make sense. But one of my kids, I just noticed that they were not, 100% kind of in the game, and just spent a little time talking to this child. And just trying to really, I'm a pretty nosy parent. So if I see anything, I immediately will jump in and really start just kind of picking away, like, what's going on, nothing, what's going on, until finally I can get them to just, break him or her. And so for this kid, I just was like, but what's going on, And they, they just basically, I think what it came down to is that they just wish they were back in school. There's such an anxiety that our kids are facing with this freaking, virus, that it's causing serious, anxiety issues. And I think they're trying to go to a place and to do things that keep them from focusing on, the reality of this freaking virus that can take a life, and for a young kid, that's a sobering reality to to realize that everybody's life is so changed now, and there's nothing you can do about it. And yeah, of course, it's a life lesson, and it's something that you have to learn, and there's no sense, you know, coddling. But as a parent, it hurts me to see any of my kids feel that way. And if you're a parent and you relate, then you obviously understand that sometimes there's no magic phrase to say to make everybody's life feel better. But you know, knowing that that they're going through that, I mean, you want to take that burden from them. So, you know, as a parent, it's hard for me to see my kids go through that. And it's easy for me, you know, obviously with my line of work, which has been completely just unhinged and disrupted. There's a few people on here I can already see who do similar stuff that I do. My gigs are all canceled for months. Like, the way that we pay bills is me traveling. It's all gone. There is nothing in place really officially that I can count on for the next few months. Unless we can figure out a way to translate it virtually, it's over. And so it's easy for me to just focus on me to say, oh my gosh, you know, I can't believe this. Like, why am I, you know, like, what am I going to do? How are we going to, you know, whatever, pay for bills? And how are we going to, you know, what do we do? But the reality of my kids going through this stuff and the feelings that are just overwhelming them. And it was just a really an important night for me and my kid to just sit and kind of process through that a little bit. It was a good wake up call for me too, to realize, you know, I gotta just regularly be checking up on them. I mean, you would think, oh, I don't need to check up on them because they're like literally right next to me at all times, practically. You know, I know where to find them. They're in their room, or they're, you know, they're doing homework, sitting on the couch, or they're outside, you know, working on something. But just that reminder, you know, to ask, you know, how's it going? And this is the other problem, is that I have a hard time a little bit with the, you know, the phrase, like, we're all in this together. And I just want to say, sometimes usually the people saying we're all in this together are people that are like millionaires, you know. And that doesn't bring me a lot of consolation when I see somebody who's like a multimillionaire with all these, you know, movie deals or music deals or whatever, and then, you know, like, we're gonna make it, let's just kind of, we're all in this together. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, you don't have to worry for a year whether you bring in income or not, and everybody's watching your shows on Netflix, so you're making bank. The people I know who are in, you know, whatever, whether it's the entertainment industry or whether it's lay evangelistic work, or you're traveling around, you're doing motivational talks, your job is to interact with people and to lift them up, to empower them and to encourage them. It's all gone in terms of the regular norm. And I can guarantee you this, it's very few of us that are making the same kind of money online that we were when we would travel. And it's just a different ball game. And so, you know, it's hard for me to swallow this idea. Hey, yeah, we're all in this together. And I think, you know, it's not, we're not really all in this together. Like, it's not the same. You know, like I've said this the other day, is that, you know, a lot of people who come on this feed are from all over the country and all over the world, really. And there are certain areas where there's hardly any activity, and it's very minimal in terms of the impact of the virus. And so for them, it can be very difficult to think, oh my gosh, why is my life unhinged and, you know, completely disrupted because of what's happening in a state a few thousand miles away from me? But, you know, the funny thing, and look, I have no, you know, I'm not, I don't have the virus, I'm fine. But before this happened, I was in Australia, Los Angeles, Baltimore, you know, like within the couple months of the first year, you know, part of the year, January, February, I was all over the world. And that's the reason why, you know, this is such a big deal, is that people, you know, are transmitting this everywhere. I mean, how many opportunities I had to get infected was insane to me. And I was neurotic about it and crazy. I was really breathing a sigh of relief in a way, when I knew, okay, I took my last trip, we're gonna be home, let's settle in and let's get through this. But it's a whole new norm that's a bit scary. So anyway, the agony in the garden. Yeah. I suppose so, huh? Yeah, a lot of anxiety because of the uncertainty. And I think that's the big part of it, especially for my kids, is you know, there's no way to know. You know, there's no way to know when it'll be done. And when it's done, how likely is it that people are going to be like, hey, yeah, let's get together and go to a concert and party again? And I've seen some of the memes that are like, hey, we're going to get together, we're going to go out, we're going to do all this stuff. And I just think there's going to be a huge portion of people that are going to be like, I don't know if I want to go out yet because is this stuff like really done? And if they are talking about it being potentially seasonal, I mean, that's just going to make my head explode. I mean, that's just something I can't even get my brain around. But anyway, it's beyond my pay grade, I'll tell you that. Like, so I'm praying that somebody can come up with whatever needs to be coming up with to counter the ill effects. And just praying for the people who are going through this. The other thought I had, and again, I'm sorry for it being a little bit somber, but I mean, I'm not really talking about this a lot, but just the fact of people who are passing away without their loved ones near them. I mean, that just about breaks my heart. I just can't. I was thinking about this a lot because my mother-in-law's in her 90s. My mother and my father are obviously, they're still alive, so they're a lot older. I mean, the fact that they could potentially get sick, or somebody that we know who's older gets sick and they have nobody near them to be with them, I mean, that's just horrifying. And you know, the consolation for people who are people of faith is knowing that, you know, none of us will die alone truly when it comes to our faith. We, you know, we have the angels and we have the saints that are with us, and certainly that is the consolation. But to be able to say goodbye to the people that you love, for those of us who remain, is a big deal. And Lord have mercy. So we'll switch gears here a little bit. I just was thinking a lot about my kid tonight, to be honest, and just thinking about how just important it is for all of us to be just in each other's kind of life. And, yeah. But it's hard. You know, I'm the kind of person too that's I don't want to really disclose, hey, I'm depressed today. Like, that's the last thing I want to say to somebody. And the reason I think I'm like that is that I feel like my job is to really just encourage and uplift people. So, but it's just definitely, it's the kind of thing where you're like, you just, yeah, I think for me especially, just recognizing the importance and the beauty of just speaking that life and that encouragement into my family. And I've had some people, friends of mine, who've reached out, you know, how you doing? And I mean, there's a part of me that I'm just getting like, fine, you know, it's the same typical thing that we all get from our kids. How you doing? What's going on? I'm fine. You know, like, who really wants to hear? Like, well, we're completely terrified right now. We have no idea what we're going to do with this thing called life. So, but yeah. And, you know, God is with us. That is the great peace amidst the storm, right? So, I'm not okay, you're not okay, but it's okay. Funny enough, I'm not 100% sure a pandemic was really what was kind of behind me writing that book. There are some principles that'll work there, though, so I'll give you that. Yeah, Melissa, I think a lot of people are like that. People who are really upbeat, it can easily be a time of struggle and difficulties, solidarity and brokenness, yeah. I feel like I'm very lucky right now to be with my family here. So super blessed and grateful and thankful. There's a million ways this could have been worse and horrible, but, for all intents and purposes, I have a lot to rejoice over. And so we're doing a lot to keep the brain on positive things. But, you know, I think we're all going to have at any given moment those little meltdowns where we realize, oh my gosh, I'm feeling a little bit unhinged right now. So, yeah. Anyway, so look, for any of you interested, and some of you already know this, but every day at noon Eastern Standard Time, Linda and I, my wife and I, we do our little thing called the County Route Report, and we're getting the hang of it. We're gonna figure this out. We're going through the alphabet right now, just having fun with these silly words. I think we did G today, so anything that was around G, we just kind of did. We hung out with it. It was fun, and we take questions. We just flow, and it's super lo-fi. It's not meant to be teaching. It's just, let's just be together kind of deal. Kind of like, in a way, what I do at night. Although this is usually ranting. Usually I'm ranting about something right now. So I probably will transition into a rant soon enough. Because there's no way I'm going to just spend this time being serious the whole time. You know, I can't. I just cannot. So I'm going to transition. And I'll probably start talking about books. So you're going to have to just either shut me off or deal with it. Because I love talking about books. It's what I do. All right. Interestingly enough, though, today... apparently, when a turtle or tortoise poops, it smells. So, and my daughter brought her tortoise with her. Do you even know someone who owns a tortoise? My daughter owns a tortoise. A tortoise. His name's Greg. Who names a tortoise Greg? It's hilarious, you know? So he took a dump today, right after we finished, you know, talking to him. We brought him on the show, the Happy Place Homestead, the County Route Report. And then they put him down, and he took a dump, I think, over there, and it smelled up the thing. I mean, how we're feeding it. We literally provided for it. We gave it a place to live, brand new mulch, lettuce leaves in it, and it gives the gift that apparently was going to keep on giving. Do you know? Rest in peace, Speedy. It will outlive everyone. This thing could live to 80, 120 years. And it could get to be 150 pounds. That's like a child. That's a lot of freaking lettuce. And do people even eat tortoise? I've heard of turtle soup, but the big thing is, if you're like a tortoise lover, tortoises are not turtles. They look a lot alike. I'm going to probably have somebody here who's like some tortoise freak, and they're going to be like, oh my gosh, you know, tortoises are so different from turtles. All right, let's go to books. Let's just do books. We have to. Kathy, thank you. I was promised books. And Sarah's saying books. Let's do books, because that's way better than tortoise poop. Okay, so here's the story. I've been writing a ton of books lately. So, let me rephrase that. I've been writing a ton of books the last couple years, and then they're all kind of coming out right now. So... we repackaged The Mystery of Joy. So I'm pretty pumped about that. That's up now on Amazon. It's a cool book. And what it does is it looks at kind of the joyful ways that we can approach life in the glorious, luminous, sorrowful, joyful. Kind of follows the idea of the rosary. And that's a pretty cool book that we were able to repackage and put out. We got the rights back to it. It was awesome. Second thing was I did my thesis for my licentiate for my pontifical degree, and that's on the life and the Mariology of Father Juniper Carroll, which nobody's going to really care about this book, but it was a pretty big deal for me, obviously. So that's coming out I think it's being uploaded, and they finished up the cover and all that good stuff. And then the last one, which we're going through the personal edits on right now, which is called Keep Your Head Down and Your Faith Up, which is a really good book for this time. So, but ultimately it was really more about like, don't compare yourself with other people, because God's doing something with you. So that's the gist of it. And because it's just easy to kind of compare yourself with others and think, oh, why do they get all those blessings, and why am I over here like this? And so I just think I needed the reminder God was doing a work in me. That's what I have to focus on. Boom. So it was pretty cool. And then, so that's kind of neat, because I saw a cover proof for it that looked pretty cool, and I think it's going to work. So anyway, all that stuff should be out. I'm finishing a book on, actually, interesting. This is really very interesting. It's on primarily on the gift of tongues. Charismatic gifts, basically. I had done a book called Why We Need the Holy Spirit. It really looked at the Holy Spirit and the role of, and the work of the Spirit in Acts of the Apostles. It's like a Bible study kind of vibe. So I wrote that book, and that was pretty cool. That's done fairly well. It's like a retreat. It's kind of like a little Bible study, and you know, it's meant to be kind of read and reflected on, like, while you're reading the Acts of the Apostles. Well, I just felt like I needed to do a treatment on the gifts of the Spirit and the fruits of the Spirit. So, and with really a big focus on the gift of tongues, which seems to be one of the biggest controversial topics. So, so that's kind of cool. And I'm probably about halfway done with that. And hopefully we'll have that out soon. That'll have a lot of really cool personal stories there. I grew up in a charismatic church when I was a kid, and then of course was certainly involved with a lot of the things that were happening in the charismatic movement within the Catholic Church, I've had some really cool kind of moments where I think it speaks to people who struggle with that and speaks to people who are involved in that. So that's kind of nice. And then I've been, you know, interested in playing around with this idea of just putting out something that would almost be like a collection of short stories, stuff that's not religious at all that I've kind of worked on or written. So, all right, that's my springboard into now books that I want to talk about. So, I had the big, it wasn't a debate, but I had a big conversation with a friend of mine from high school the other day, and we were talking about genres of literature. Now, I love fantasy, so fantasy is a big thing for me. When I was a kid, I really liked and was bitten by the fantasy bug. I mean, I had read The Hobbit when I was a kid, thought it was awesome, and then I don't know how I ended up getting a hold of it, but Terry Brooks' first book, The Sword of Shannara. I loved that book. And then, so then I read, you know, the Elfstones of Shannara, the Wish Song of Shannara. So I was Shannara'd up, all right? And a lot of people were a little bit wigged out and irritated because they felt like basically Terry Brooks, who's the Shannara author, that he was kind of basically ripping off the primary points of Tolkien. And that's a legitimate, you know, argument, if you will. But the thing about it is that he has written so many books that he's gone above and beyond, well beyond anything that could have been, you know, compared to ultimately Tolkien. So he's his own, he's created his own world, and I think he's phenomenal. And he's a good author for people who are interested in fantasy. Tried to listen in Name of the Wind, but it stopped. Should I give it another try? But you stopped. Yeah. Yes. The Name of the Wind is probably my most favorite recent fantasy book. But let me rephrase it. It's not recent. It was like put out like 10, 15 years ago. He's written two in that series. Let's see. It's called, I keep looking over here because I have it here. Yeah, the Name of the Wind and Wise Man's Fear. The thing about this guy, though, Patrick Rothfuss is the author. He literally is an epic fantasy mind. So he basically, to tell his story, he tells like a dozen other stories. And so by the time you're done with a book, you're like, holy crap, that was amazing. But then you're left with, like, I have about, you know, three dozen questions now. And then he tackles a lot of them in the second one, but then he opens up a whole nother can of, you know, of other questions. And I'm worried about him because I don't think he's going to finish it before he dies. Like, I just don't think, I don't know how he's going to do it. This guy's trapped, I think, in his, he's either the kind of person who's like so overwhelmed with the reality of what's before him and he can't do it, and it's just never going to get done. Or, you know, or he's the kind of person that's so neurotic and hyper meticulous that he will never release it because it's never going to be perfect enough, you know? I don't know if I could listen to, though, the audible of that, Sarah, just so you know. I don't know if I could listen to that. I have to read fiction. But I can listen to nonfiction on Audible or biographies. I just have a hard time personally listening to. I think part of it is because my brain will wander a little bit when I'm listening to Audible, unless I'm all in. So that's just me. Whatever. But here's a couple of things, books I haven't really ever talked about, like some authors that are pretty cool. There's an author named Henning Mankell, and Henning Mankell passed away just recently, but he is he's the creator of what's called the Wallander. series. You can watch some Wallander episodes on like BBC, which are pretty good actually. But his character is a little bit, he's a little bit broken. And actually, I'm super drawn to inspectors or mysteries that have a detective that is flawed. And to me, I'm more interested in the kind of the flawed character than the, you know, I'm doing everything perfect, you know? Like I've read some Lee Child books, and I can get it. I can get why they're entertaining and they're fun. But you know, this guy is such a bad-to-the-bone person that, you know he's always going to kick someone's butt and win in the end. But, you know, some of these stories of detectives, they may solve the crime, but their life unravels, and they're kind of unhinged, basically. And there's, I'm going to mispronounce this, but I'm just going to look for a second to see if I actually, yeah, hold on. So, okay. This is, I'm going to have to look to see if unfortunately my butt crack made an appearance when I stretched. So if it did, forgive me. Okay. So I'm going to try to pronounce this, this author's name. It's Arnaldo, Arnalder and Dryadson. Okay, and it's called Silence of the Grave. All right, so I've read almost everything that this guy's put out in English. His stuff is Icelandic, like inspectors. And I'm going to just tell you the simple, basic premise of this, because you're probably not going to read it. But this guy, when he was a kid, had a major trauma that happened to him. I'm not going to disclose what it is, but it's so insane. It's so insane that you ask the question, I don't even know how I could go on and function as a human being. And that's what you keep realizing. Every single book of this guy will address basically that one issue in some form and fashion. But he's a phenomenal detective. And what I love about international mysteries, and I read a lot of kind of inspector books from different countries, so is I like being placed into a different country. And so the way that the author will write about that particular country is really fascinating to me. So like, I'm not a huge fan of like James Patterson, because again, I get that's already the world I'm kind of in. You know, I get the American world. So whatever. And I've read some James Patterson. I like him. He's not bad. He comes out with a book every 4 days, but I like the almost just like a bam, I'm placed into a whole new world that I don't really recognize, but I kind of recognize. And so that's Henning Mankell, and that's this Arnalder and Dryadson guy. And then there was this couple that would write books together. I want to say that they were in Sweden as well. I can't remember off the top of my head, but they're good. There's this Italian mystery guy that I've read a couple of his books, and I like them a lot. Again, if I had the books here, I didn't really plan on going through the books that I like, but anyway, but back to fantasy. So for me, though, I picked up last night, I had started this book called Mistborn by Brendan Sanderson. And I don't know if it was someone on the thread last night, it might have been Jennifer, but somebody had mentioned Sanderson. And I love his stuff. So, and the Mistborn series is a pretty famous series. Now, the thing about Brendan Sanderson that's so fascinating to me is that he finished the Wheel of Time series by Robert Jordan. So Robert Jordan had like 15 books, 14 books, and then he passed away. And then the family entrusted, you know, the story and the continuation and finishing of the series to Sanderson. So what's also interesting is, like, for example, Robert Ludlum, who is, you know, espionage. He's kind of most known for like the Bourne Supremacy and all those. He's like a master at his craft. When he passed away, you know, his series has continued on, and there's a lady that's written a number of books for him, and her name is Gail Linz. And Gail Linz had about 4 or 5 books even on her own, and I had read all of them, and I thought she was great. So if you like spy thrillers, kind of look behind your back stuff, I love him. My all-time favorite, though, in terms of like the thriller and the look behind your back kind of books, is a guy named David Morrell, M-O-R-R-E-L, or L. Yeah, here he is. Like, I'm gonna grab it here. So, like, here's an example of a book by David Morrell. It's called The Protector, and M-O-R-R-E-L-L. But David Morrell is the guy that invented Rambo. And people are like, oh, you know, Rambo, whatever, it doesn't matter. But the book was pretty good, and the first movie was pretty good. And he's a serious writer, but he's kind of known as almost like the father of the thriller. And so if you're interested in something that's kind of pretty fast-paced, David Morrell is kind of a classic legend. But if I were to be asked, like, what's your favorite author? My favorite author is probably, just in terms of the secular world, would be probably Stephen King, which to some people that might be a little surprising, but I think he's a genius in a lot of ways, because what he does is he gets you to care about a character and then he messes with the character. And I don't know that they've had very many successful books translate into movies or TV shows, but boy, oh boy, I'm a huge fan. I probably read most things by Stephen King. I don't know if that's 100% true. I've read a lot. We'll say a lot, because he comes out with a lot of books too, a couple a year. Are you asking what the name of Silence of the Grave is the name of the book by Arnaldur Indriðason. And I swear to you, I don't even know if that cannot possibly be how you pronounce it. I don't know how you pronounce it. So anyway, Jesus, what about Jesus? Okay, have you ever seen the movie, Hunt for the Wilder People? It's the classic New Zealand movie. You know, you might think The Lord of the Rings is the classic New Zealand movie, but if in New Zealand, the people there, they're going to refer you to this movie called Hunt for the Wilder People. And it's hilarious. And it's hilarious because it really gives you the New Zealand kind of humor and kind of approach to some things. Super quirky. In fact, from New Zealand is a very funny band called Flight of the Conchords. And they actually had a season or two on HBO where they tried to put a storyline to their silly songs. Oh my gosh, they're so funny, it's insane. Anyway, the Hunt for the Wilder People, Matt, your Jesus, when you put that there, it just reminded me of the movie, because at one point someone dies and they're at this funeral, and he's like, you know, there's life is, when you die, you know, you're in a room and there's a door, and what's behind the door? And somebody says, Jesus? And he's like, you'd think it was Jesus, but it's not. What's behind the door? And they're like, vegetables? Anyway, when you see it, we can talk about it, because it's pretty freaking funny. So, anyway. Their vampire show is so funny. For Flight of the Conchords, they have a vampire show. Are you talking about an episode, or did they do a separate treatment for the vampire show? So, Sarah, you've never read Stephen King. So here's the deal. Everybody says about Stephen King, oh, I don't want to read him because he's scary. The thing is, there's only been one book of his that was, to me, that had a moment where I was like a little bit freaked out. And that was The Shining. When you read that book, no problem, no problem, no problem. And then once you get into that hotel, there's some stuff that happened that it's you're freaking out when you're flying through the pages. When I was younger and I was reading a lot of stuff, I had read Pet Sematary. So when you ask Stephen King, like, what's the book that was the most freaky for him, it was Pet Sematary. And the reason, I mean, it's obvious, because as a parent, what's your greatest fear is that your kid would be hurt. And he had this experience where his son was running, and at the last second he caught him before this huge truck was going by and would have hit him. You know, he's a little toddler, a little tiny thing. And but the truck was so close to his son that he could see the wind, you know, brushed his hair, kind of. And that was kind of the motivation behind him when he wrote Pet Sematary. And I don't think he originally wanted to release that even. It just made him so uncomfortable. So I read that book when I was in high school. And I don't know. I didn't think it was that amazing, actually. I don't know what the deal was. It just wasn't for me at the right time. I just thought, okay, and then the stereotype was always Stephen King starts a great story and then he doesn't know how to end it. But I actually don't think that's true either. He doesn't end it the way maybe people want him to end it, because he's playing in a different world. Like, he literally has created his own world. So every book in some way, it seems to brush up against that world. Here's the book I would recommend of Stephen King's that is so phenomenal, that was one of my all-time favorite books. It's probably the one that every time I mention it, some people, a lot of people agree with me, but it's his treatment that he did on the Kennedy assassination, 11/22/63. Now, here's the thing. I never wanted to read that book because I thought the last thing I want to do is go down another journey of a hypothetical Lee Harvey Oswald and what's going on there. So I decided to not read that one first. You know, I read a ton of his others. And then finally I picked it up about a couple years ago, and it just blew me away. It was amazing. Now they did make like a little mini series with James Falco. He played the main part. I didn't really care for it. I actually stopped watching the mini series, and I love the book. So anyway, blah blah blah. I don't know how much more you want to talk about books. It's probably boring most of you to death, but what's the first King book I should read? Yeah, so I think the if you want to be scared, go ahead and read The Shining, and then basically you're gonna be with me up at night, because you're not gonna be able to sleep at some point. But I liked some of his older books because I liked the way it's dated. This is the cool thing too about him, is that you're placed back into the time period that he's writing. So I liked reading Cujo because it was literally during that time period, and the way he talks about certain things it's kind of cool. Like it's a little time warp. So the stories still stand even if the context is dated for us, but it's kind of cool. So I would honestly think that The Stand is one of my all-time favorites of his, and that might be, I mean, with the pandemic and all that, it might not be the best book to jump into, but that was unbelievable. So The Stand was like the epic battle between good and evil, and it was so good. It was insane. That's I would either start with the 11/22/63 or The Stand, and I'd probably lean towards The Stand. Like, I don't know. I'm just looking at them now. I have them all in my office here, and there's, if you like, he has the trilogy of like almost like a police novels with Mr. Mercedes, Finders Keepers, and End of the of Watch. Those are good, but I don't know. I should probably go to bed soon. I'm actually not going to go to bed. I'm going to go read for a little while. That's what's going to happen. So, anyway, I just want you guys to know I think you're awesome. I hope you're having a great night. And we can talk about whatever you want tomorrow. But I just am a big fan of the book thing. So, let's see. Did you see? Oh, It. Yeah. Let's just talk about that for a second. The second book that was a little bit unnerving, that was a little scary at times, would have been It. So The Shining and It. So if you're a person that likes to be like freaked out a little bit, those are the two. I'm not a fan of being unhinged and freaked out. Now, when I was a kid and I was reading a lot of books, an even scarier author for me back then was Dean Koontz. And I don't know what the deal was, but Dean Koontz, some of those early books of his were like, they were freaky for me. You know, I don't know why, but they messed with me a little bit. So he definitely, he kind of wrote in a way that was a little bit more of a unhinging for me. But some Catholic fictions that may have flown under the radar. So Josh, here's some good Catholic fiction. Michael O'Brien has a number of books, and I personally like him. He had like Father Elijah. That's the one I would start with. That's the best. And that's, and then he's got a whole bunch of Strangers and Sojourners and the Plague Journal. And, you know, so those are pretty enjoyable. There's another book series that is by, I think his name is David Manuel, and he wrote these about four mysteries that took place in the Cape Cod area. But he's kind of part of this, like, almost like an ecumenical monastery type thing. So it has this religious tone. They sold it at Franciscan, actually. That's where I got it. I don't know why they sold those books. I bet nobody read them. That's what I bet. Because it was a little bit ambiguous in terms of faith. But, yeah, I would start with O'Brien, personally. And honestly, not to be weird, but as a general rule, you know, like Catholic or Christian fiction can be lame. I would say, though, like going back to fantasy, that Stephen Lawhead. So when I was younger, I used to work at a Christian bookstore, and Stephen Lawhead was writing, and like The Warlords of Nin, I think, was one of them. And he had this trilogy of books that was like an epic fantasy. And he was phenomenal, and he was respected in the literary world, in the fantasy world, period. So it didn't matter that he was Christian. But he's written, and he still writes, tons of books that are pretty awesome. So you might want to download it, Sarah. I don't know if you have a Kindle, but I love Father Elijah, and I think there's a second one out kind of with him. I got it. So I haven't watched it or read it. I mean, so anyway, I mean, personally, I don't, if I'm going to read a spiritual book, I'm going to read a spiritual book that's probably going to deal with something that is, you know, on a topic. I'm not going to go to the Catholic world for fiction. Of course, Chesterton's Father Brown series would work. And I, of course, I love Perelandria, the series by Lewis. The science fiction trilogy is phenomenal, Out of the Silent Planet. If you've not read those are worth your time. So anyway, look, I hope you have a great night. Happy reading, you guys. Pray for your family. Ask questions. We love y'all. And if you want to join us tomorrow at around noon, we're going to have a good time. I'm assuming the letter will be H. All right. God bless.